To Syria now, a vicious pattern with brutal results, but this time a line may have been crossed. More than 100 people massacred in the Syrian town of Hawla near the city of Homs after the Syrian government reportedly attacked rebel positions there. Opposition representatives said that the massacre in close range was carried out by members of the Shabiha militia, pro-regime thugs they are called, and they have been widely and independently observed, adding to the violence in Syria's embattled villages and towns. The UN Security Council held an emergency meeting yesterday afternoon on the incidents in Hawla and unanimously condemned the Syrian regime for evidence that Syrian heavy weapons were present in the area, according to UN monitors, and that they fired upon civilians. The Security Council statement made no mention of pro-regime militia killers, but it gave no credibility to the Syrian claim that opposition terrorists were responsible for the slaughter. Among the dead were 32 horribly mutilated children. Over the weekend, Senator John McCain criticized the Obama administration for inaction, speaking here on Fox News.
Horrible things are happening in Syria. This administration has a feckless foreign policy which abandons American leadership.
Meanwhile, British officials are in Russia today to try and influence Syria's closest ally, and Kofi Annan is back in Damascus to salvage whatever remains of his, the UN, and the Arab League's peace initiative. Amr al-Azam, member of the Syrian opposition and professor of history and anthropology at Shawnee State University, joins us once again. Professor, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you.
Also with us is Joshua Landis, once again, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Josh, it's great to talk to you again.
Good to be here, John.
Amr al-Azam, can you describe this pattern that we've observed in media news reports of the military using heavy weapons in what appears to have been some sort of attack on civilians in Hawla, but then also violence that stems, at least according to some opposition forces, from the Shabiha militia, these pro-regime thugs, as the opposition calls them? Is this an organized phenomenon that you've observed in your contacts with people inside Syria, Amr al-Azam?
Yes, look, this is all part of the regime's consistent behavior. This is a consistent pattern of behavior that we've seen right from the very start. And it stems from a playbook. This regime operates off a playbook. The playbook was written by the father. The son continues to apply the playbook. The playbook says, if opposition occurs against the regime, suppress with extreme brutality. And this is just another manifestation of that brutality. But this is also a sign of a loss of discipline of the regime, because this massacre far goes beyond anything we've seen so far. And I do believe that this will only get worse as the regime becomes more and more desperate to try and save itself and enforce its will on the people.
Joshua Landis, does the Syrian government have plausible deniability of its connection to this Shabiha militia phenomenon? And if, as Amr al-Azam suggests, they're losing control of these pro-regime militia forces, will the situation get worse in your view in the coming weeks and months?
I think Ahmad has it right. The Shabiha are part of the overall defense structure. You know, you can think of lots of regimes that have special forces that are attached to the party and to the top alongside the military. And these are special forces. They've been used from the day one by the regime in suppressing this. And they're generally Alawite. They're close to the regime top figures. And this is a way of trying to gain loyalty so you don't get defections. We've saw a lot of defections at the bottom of the military as Sunnis left the military. So what the regime has done is it's cycled in more loyal people who tend to be from their sectarian group. So this is getting all the classic hallmarks of a ethnic, religious, communal struggle in Syria. And it's one the Alawites cannot win in the long run because they're only 12%. On the other hand, they're a modern army. They've held together quite well. And the opposition is very disorganized. And the international community doesn't want to jump in and take charge of Syria.
What do you make of this charge from Senator John McCain that the administration's foreign policy is feckless? You've got the Brits in Russia trying to influence the Russians. I can't imagine that the Brits have much influence over Russia, although Russia may see that it's in its own self-interest to try to move here. Do you think that the administration could do more, Joshua Landis?
You know, I don't think the United States has the credentials for this kind. We've done this in Iraq. We did this in Afghanistan. We can wipe out third world governments easily. We could use close air, ground support, and destroy the presidential palace and all the major military implantations in the country. Now, we could creep up to it or we could just do it. The trouble is there is no leader today of the Syrian opposition. The head of the Syrian National Council resigned last week under tons of criticism from his own people. There are at least 60 or 70 militias in Syria. What's likely to happen is not that there will be another leader emerge who's going to take charge of the Syrian opposition. What's likely to happen here is like Lebanon or Iraq, where you get a bunch of different militias all vying for control. So if America destroys the government, which it could do very easily, the killing is likely to go up. And that's the danger. We don't know if that's true, and perhaps Ahmed will say something different. But the thing is, if it does, is the United States responsible for nation building and for suppressing violence and for rebuilding a nation? In a Friends of Syria meeting just last week, the Syrian leadership and opposition figures asked for over $12 billion to rebuild Syria once the government is brought down, because the country is desperately poor, nothing is working, and the infrastructure is collapsing under these heavy sanctions and civil war situations. So this is a major undertaking for whoever does it. And that's why I think people are trying to stay out. Obama doesn't want to get into the Middle East. He wants to get out.
All right. Let's get an assessment in our final minute from Amr al-Azam. Where do you think things are headed at this point? And do you think this is a tipping point, this massacre?
This massacre could be a tipping point, but I must also stress, look, this idea that there's going to be chaos and there's going to be a total collapse of the system and there's going to be complete loss of control is also over, it's an overblowing or almost trying to suggest that the opposition is totally incapable of managing the uprising. Yes, there are divisions between the opposition. Yes, there are divisions within the leadership. But look on the ground. Look at the activism on the ground. Look at the protests. Today you had widespread protests on the ground, and you also had a widespread closure of stores and everything else. At the end of the day, to suggest somehow that there is no there's no alternative but to continue somehow to prop up this regime is totally unacceptable as well. The regime must go.
Amr al-Azam, member of the Syrian opposition, professor of history and anthropology at Shawnee State University, and Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Thanks to you both.
Good to be here.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.